the white-collar criminals in the sense that these crimes, and as we see with what's going on with the presidency, although they're much far less complex.
This is Mr. PvP, and we're broadcasting live from Hudson. This is WGXC, Accra.
You're listening to Radio Wonderland, live on WGXC, radio made from radio.
Tune in Joshua Free's Radio Wonderland, Saturdays at 10:30 a.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM for a live remix of New York City Morning Radio on WGXC, Creative Community Radio. Tune in for an historic day on WGXC Tuesday, December 18th with Hudson Valley historian Sylvia Hassenkopf on the WGXC Morning Show live at Hilo in Catskill between 9 and 11 a.m. Mandy Stostak's work is featured on the Framework Show at 3 p.m. on the radio. And then at 4 p.m.
This is George Spencer, and this afternoon from 4 to 6 on WGXC, I'm going to be on the radio with Pauline DeCarmo. And we're going to be talking with some very interesting people who are involved in the arts, in the graphic arts and music in the Hudson Valley. One of them is Arlene Santana, who is a visual artist who's shown at a number of galleries in here and in Europe and different parts of the United States. And we're going to be joined by her daughter, who also is Arlene, but her last name is Sierra, and she is a classical musician and a composer whose work has been performed all over the world, including by the Albany Symphony. And the third person is Tom McGill, who manages the art gallery called the Gallery at 46 Green Street, and we've been talking to Tom about his experiences running a gallery, how that works, and also about his own art projects. We hope you'll listen in. It's George Spencer, and it's going to be fun. It's going to be me and Pauline DeCarmo. If while you're listening, the weather is iffy these days, so be careful and buy all the presents you're going to buy, and have a wonderful holiday.
At 7 p.m., tune in Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and the most complete international news around. Dan Seward is in at 10 p.m. with the Battlefield Earth Show on WGXC 90.7 FM, radio for open ears.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the Healthcare Consortium, a rural health network dedicated to improving access to health care and supporting the health and well-being of the people in our rural community. Throughout 2018, the Healthcare Consortium will be celebrating 20 years of serving the residents of Columbia and Greene counties. To learn more about the Healthcare Consortium and its services, please visit www.columbiahealthnet.org or call 518-822-8820.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
We take you now to
this radio broadcast.
You are tuned in to All Together Now.
a collaborative one-hour news show for community radio stations in the Capital Region and New York's Hudson Valley. All Together Now features contributions from the public, along with programmers at WOOC in Troy and WGXC in Accra, featuring local and regional news, weather updates, and newsmaker interviews.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for Tuesday, December 18th, 2018. I'm Eric Tegedov. In our spotlight today, Senate reports detail Russian influence on the 2016 election via social media. North Carolina jurors reject the death penalty for a second consecutive year. And Medicaid expansion proves important for rural Kentuckians. This and more coming up. On Monday, the Senate Intelligence Committee released two reports on Russia's role in the 2016 election and beyond, detailing the country's efforts on social media platforms. The operations, largely led by the Kremlin-based organization Internet Research Agency, extensively targeted African-American communities and sought to suppress Democratic turnout, according to the reports. Both reports say these operations went on well after the election. Newly crunched data reveals the growing importance of Medicaid expansion for rural Kentucky. Mary Sherman has the story.
9 of the top 10 rural counties nationwide with the highest Medicaid enrollment are in Kentucky, according to research from the University of North Carolina Shep Center for Health Services Research and the Georgetown University Center for Children and Families. Executive Director Joan Alker at Georgetown says these are economically challenged counties in the southeast corner of the state, where nearly half of adults rely on Medicaid coverage.
Because these rural counties do have high poverty rates, this is Medicaid expansion working to really support not only those folks on Medicaid, but the healthcare infrastructure in those counties, including the rural hospitals.
Alker contends Kentucky's pending Medicaid waiver would result in considerable coverage losses with ripple effects throughout these counties. The waiver includes work requirements and provisions that could affect the ability of eligible people to retain coverage.
For the second year, juries imposed no new death sentences in North Carolina in 2018.
For the first time in the state's modern history, North Carolina juries have rejected the death penalty for two consecutive years. There were only three capital trials in North Carolina this year, one each in Lee, Scotland, and Wake counties. All three juries chose life without parole for the defendants instead of death sentences. Gretchen Engel, who heads the Raleigh-based Center for Death Penalty Litigation, has represented clients on death row and says more jurors are becoming educated about bias in the legal system.
Jurors are turning away from the death penalty, and in response to less favorable jury pools, prosecutors are seeking the death penalty less. And so this trend away from the death penalty is really being led by citizens who've been summoned for jury duty.
Engel says now there's greater public awareness about factors like race, geography, and economic status that play a role in determining a person's guilt or innocence. This is Antoinette Kerr reporting.
Across the U.S., homeless advocates are holding a series of memorial services this week.
Services are planned this week to honor 87 people, including 11 veterans who died this year while experiencing homelessness in eastern Nebraska. Omaha joins communities across the U.S. for the annual Homeless Persons Memorial Day, set nationally for December 21st, the first day of winter and the longest night of the year. Jerry Ford is a housing stability specialist with the group Together. He says the events are an opportunity for people left behind to say goodbye.
Especially to those that have been on the streets and they've built bonds and relationships. A lot of times that's the only family they have or know. This might be the only type of recognition or memorial or funeral type thing they get.
This year's official count identified 1,411 people experiencing homelessness in the Omaha metro area. Most of Nebraska's 2,300 homeless were located in emergency shelters or transitional housing programs, while 144 persons were unsheltered, according to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development's most recent point-in-time count.
That was Eric Gladys reporting. After a winter storm delayed a closely watched vote on the Atlantic Coast Pipeline, the issue is back before a citizens' board this week.
Virginia's Air Pollution Control Board is set to decide whether the state's largest utility, Dominion Energy, can build a sprawling gas-fired compressor station in the historically black community of Union Hill in Buckingham County. It's been the focus of ongoing protests from environmental groups and critics, like Andrea Miller with Virginia's Poor People's Campaign, who argues the project puts a disproportionate burden on low-income and minority people.
They sited the compressor station in an historic freedman's town. How ugly and terrible is that? They had originally talked about doing it near George Washington's home, at which point they were immediately chased out of there.
Dominion Energy insists that relocating isn't possible because the station must intersect with an existing pipeline, and the Union Hill parcel was the right spot with a willing seller. I'm Tramell Gomes.
Animal rights advocates are reminding pet owners that cold weather can be fatal to dogs and cats that remain outside. Andrea Sears has this report.
Many people keep their pets in backyard enclosures or tied to doghouses even during the winter. Like humans, pets can suffer from deadly frostbite and exposure and can experience dehydration if their drinking water freezes. Last winter, at least 50 cold weather animal deaths were reported nationwide, but most deaths are not reported at all. According to Kaylee Rhodes with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, pets already are at risk this year.
Just this week in Fayette County, a dog was found left outside in 26-degree weather, and police are currently filing charges for animal cruelty on that case.
She urges pet owners to bring their animals inside, if possible, when the weather is cold.
I'm Eric Tegadoff, and you've been newsin' and cruisin' with Public News Service. We are member and listener-supported and online at publicnewsservice.org.
Note to amateur stations, this rain report has two identification breaks. A presentation on national parks on the air to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, with the rain report for December 16th. Sean Kutzko, KX9X, and Norm Fusaro, W3IZ, presented a report on the recently concluded National Parks on the Air, NPOTA, event at the Dayton Hamvention. It was so successful that the Radio Amateurs of Canada, RAC, are planning a similar event in 2019. There will be more information on this at the end of this report. It is an interesting report, so let's get right to it.
Hi, everybody. In case you don't know, I'm Sean Kutzko, KX9X. That's Norm Fusaro at W3IZ.
Hey, guys. Thanks for coming out today. Thanks for staying.
As everybody here knows, National Parks on the Air was obviously one of the biggest events in all of amateur radio, and it all happened because of you going out and going to these sites that we created the event for, and for the chasers who stayed home and worked some of us with those piddly little 5-watt signals and that we had with wire antennas. So I just wanted to really say thank you, and that was the main reason why Norm and I wanted to do this forum, was just to say thank you. Yep. So here's what we're going to do today. We're going to give you about a minute's worth of statistics. Some of you already know this stuff because you're data obsessed like I am. But really, we're just going to throw out a few questions, and I want to hear from you what your stories were, some of your biggest successes, some of the things that you learned. Give us some feedback. What are some things that we can do better with for the next event? So you're going to have to wait patiently while we get all of the situation worked out a little bit, but it's coming. Let's give you a little statistics here. Before the event started, I would have been happy with about 400,000 or 500,000 contacts in an entire year for all of this. Boy, did you guys prove me wrong. 1,108,960 QSOs uploaded. That's you. That's you. 21,344 activations. 460 out of the 489 units were activated. Some only once or twice under some incredibly difficult operating circumstances. And a couple of you who put some of those units on the air, especially folks like Pete Kobach, K0BAK, going into densely populated urban areas and pulling off an activation like that. Pete, stand up, man. You deserve a round for that.
I I want to acknowledge Peter also, because when this thing first came out, he sent emails that it was impossible. We shouldn't have this. We should operate from there. And we said, no, 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 man. That's for you guys to figure out how to do it. Your ingenuity, the stupor station, those things, man, that was the stuff, man. That was the stuff that made this thing successful. Yep. And if you notice, man, people just learned from everybody else by what you did. They may not duplicate it, but they picked up some ideas and stuff. So fantastic. Great ingenuity. Yep. Thank you.
Let's see. What else have we got here? 1,492 individual activators went out and put on an operation. We've got over 17,000 unique calls in the leaderboard. So that's a lot of chasers that are getting on and pursuing this as well. Over 1 million contacts. That's something that we should all be proud of. That was a big deal.
And you know what? Wait a minute. You just mentioned the chasers. When the certificate machine was turned on, one of the first certificates that came out in the first batch of 30 was from China. Yeah, he had several parks he contacted, so it was pretty cool.
So that's really all the statistical stuff. Oh, there was one other thing that I wanted to mention. So when we were creating this event and working out the logistics for it, we didn't think that there would be as much demand for sideband as it turned out that there would be. We thought that since this was an event focused on portable operating, that CW would have reigned supreme. Boy, were we wrong. 84% of all QSOs made for National Parks on the Air were sideband. 13% were CW, and just 1% or 2% were the digital modes. I only worked 4 stations on PSK or RITI throughout the entire year. Now, granted, one of them was the Dry Tortugas National Park, and that was my only QSO with that national park, so I'm really grateful for that. You know, I think in looking at the way that the Centennial QSO Party was run in 2014, that was an event that was completely wide open. You could, you know, run any band, any mode. And we were trying to rope things in a little bit to make it a little bit more manageable. And I think we pushed it back just a little too far. I think that if we had opened up the event so that you could work each unit once per mode, that it would have been a little bit more enjoyable and you would have seen more CW and digital activity. So that's a lesson that we learned. You know, we got that one wrong, but we'll incorporate that into future events that we have. What I would like to do at this point is just ask some questions and see if you all had any comments or great stories that you could tell us. So I'm going to take this microphone that Norm's holding here, and I'm going to be running up and down all over the place to make sure that everybody can hear this, and also so that we get it on the video as well. So I'm going to take this microphone and be down there in just a second. So bear with me.
We talked about this at the table. You know, we're trying to develop another event going forward. So, you know, trying to get IT to do some data mining on something that's already passed, you know, it takes resources. And, you know, these guys are already working. In fact, when we proposed this National Parks to the board, we said, remember, your pet project is going to get pushed down the list because this is a priority now. And they all voted okay. So now all these projects that were in line to get done are back on the table for IT. So, you know, trying to get them to do some data mining is going to be a little difficult unless they feel like staying after school.
You're listening to a presentation on the recent National Parks on the Air event by Sean Kutzko, KX9X, and Norm Fusaro, W3IZ. We'll continue this presentation in a moment. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, and this is the Rain Report.
This is the 224.52 WM9W repeater, Chicago, KC9RP, Des Plaines, Illinois.
You're listening to The Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
One of the things that was exciting, of course, for all of this was your very first activation. Who here did not operate portable until they tried National Parks on the Air? You didn't do that? Okay. Let's hear from... we got Laura right here, WZ8C, and Jack, WKEC. So, okay, so you found out about National Parks on the Air, and then you decided to try it. So, tell us about your first operating experience.
Oh, that's an interesting story. I actually didn't really operate portable until I got, aside from field day, I'll say that, aside from field day. But I actually didn't even have the ability to. I didn't have a rig. I didn't have an antenna. So we go to Dayton last year. My father picks up a buddy pole, and it was just over at that point. We were going portable at that point. Picked up a buddy pole. I had a 706 Mark IIG I took out in the field, battery. And my very first activation was the River Racin down in Monroe, Michigan. And that was my very first activation. Did it with a buddy pole. We were not allowed to attach any antennas to trees. So that's why the buddy pole was so essential. And that was my very first portable activation. I've been a ham for 19 years, and I have never been as active in amateur radio as I was in 2016 at all. And that's because of you guys and your hard work and getting all of us on the radio for that 1 year. The only thing that I can say for a suggestion for whatever is the next, I mean, I'm sure you'll spill the beans before the end of the hour, but I mean, we'll work on it. But Emily, get those cookies out. Let's go. The only other thing I would say that would make my life a little bit easier was I had 406 confirmed parks as a chaser, and scrolling through all of those, trying to find, it would be so helpful if on whatever you sign in on the website or whatever, if it was marked in a different color or where it said confirmed next to it, just so it would be easier to understand when you're like, oh, okay, I'm looking up the designator on this particular park. Never mind, it's confirmed. I have that one. I'm going to let people who need it get it. Because there were those rare entities that people were fighting over, and I would purposely stay out of the way for people who needed it because I didn't need it. But it's for quickness sake, it would be nice that when you look up the designator, oh, never mind, I have it, you know, confirmed. But other than that, this was an amazing program. I'm so happy I got to meet everyone. I'm so happy everyone came out today. So thank you so much for making me an active ham again.
I actually met Laura at the end of October. I wasn't a ham, and we went out the very first week of November and did a mobile operation, throwing wire up in a tree at the North Country Trail, and that was so much fun that by December I had my general, so I could be part of the parks.
That's great. Okay, so let's just open it up for a minute. Who has a question or a comment that they want to
throw? I got one for you, because I was going to mention it. You upgraded your license during the course of the year. I know Emily upgraded. How many people upgraded their license class during the course of National Parks on the Air? Look at that. Look at that. That's great. That's great.
Other than you became a life member? Right on, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Jack, you said you didn't even have a license when National Parks on the Air started? You had your tech? Is there anybody here in attendance who did not have an amateur radio license at the beginning of 2016? Right on. Great. Sharon, right on. That's excellent. Okay. So I'd like to open this up to Steve. Okay. Steve, AG2AA, tell us a good story.
Once upon a time. So we're one of the groups that worked as a club. I didn't do any activations myself, and I didn't do any chasing. But our club, W2SO, Lancaster, New York, Buffalo, has one historic site within 300 and some odd miles of it, and it's downtown. So it's an old mansion in the downtown section of the city where Teddy Roosevelt got inaugurated after President McKinley got shot in Buffalo in 19-whatever. It's a challenge, because they have just enough grass and two trees, and they let us use both of them. So we set up field day style. We have an experienced club, we have an experienced field day club, we have experienced contesters. So we set up like it was field day. We ran 100 watts, we ran two, three stations in some cases, one CW, one sideband, one digital. And the CW ops, I mean, they would have 2-3 hour runs where it was call after call after call, sideband, call after call after call. But just like field day, we had experienced operators start the runs with an inexperienced operator logging for them, and then we'd work that inexperienced operator into the operating position. so they could get some experience with the pileups. They could have the fun. They could have that thrill of that chase. So I appreciate all of you as one of the activators at a fairly rare site, because I think we're the only ones that activated it, that we had some really awesome runs, and it was a ball. And from that end of it, from an experienced club that does field day, that was way more fun than field day. The one day the weather was miserable, they actually let us operate inside the mansion, so that was really kind of nice. The other thing we found out, funny story, is if you put the 40-meter dipole too close to the one wall, it crashes their Wi-Fi. They never put it together, because one of the staff members came out and, you know, just in casual conversation, yeah, our Wi-Fi's down, we can't figure it out. We're like, we're going to move that dipole. So it was fun. We enjoyed it, and thanks all for calling into us. I hope everybody, and I know I still owe you a QSL card, but we'll sort that out. But I think everybody should have their confirmations by now. We had some logging problems. I think we straightened it out. So thanks, guys.
Now, I'm just curious. They talk about 1.1 million QSLs for the year. When was the actual first QSL? I mean, how many operating days? Was it the full 365? Did somebody do on the 1st of January? Or how many actually operating days?
Oh, the first QSO was 0001, right?
Yeah, I worked somebody in Hot Springs National Park half an hour after the thing started on January 1st.
And which is another thing we didn't anticipate. Sean and I thought this thing was going to kind of gradually move up because of the weather, winter, you know, outdoor activity. And we thought it would just kind of like ramp up as March, April, May would go. And, man, right out of the gate, I mean, it was New Year's Eve, East Coast time, when this thing kicked off at UTC, right? And we were just, and him and I are texting each other as we're just tuning the bands, and we're going, dude, this is outrageous. We can't believe it. All these guys out there in parkas, at Lakeside, operating, freezing. It was just wild.
I went out the morning of January 1st. I thought I would be one of the first guys to go on the air for this thing. No.
Yeah.
We'll conclude this presentation on the recent National Parks on the Air event by Sean Kutzko, KX9X, and Norm Fusaro, W3IZ, right after we pause for station identification. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, and you're listening to the Rain Report. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
We got, I'm sorry. Yes, sir. One more. NO2C, yeah, coming at you.
Okay. I had the privilege with Mike of operating the White House. Yeah. And I think Mike should tell that story. Excuse me. Hay fever. No. Mike tells it so much better. My wife actually got her general because of this project. So... But with the hay fever, we'll be here half a day.
Okay. The Reader's Digest version.
The Reader's Digest version was he did all the work. KC2SYF went through a tremendous amount of work. He had to deal with the FBI. He had to deal with the Secret Service. He had to deal with the parks. He had to deal with everything. It was just an amazing amount of work, and I'm taking no credit. They let me operate for a while and log, and my wife operated, but he did everything to make this happen. We went down there, just to give you one little thing I have to tell you, we were allowed to bring two generators. Why two? Because you couldn't bring a gas can. Okay? No gas can. And Mike got through all the paperwork. He dealt with the Secret Service, who were great, by the way. They came over. They warned us when we had to hold the tent, when Obama was going to fly over the top. And we did. They came over. And I said to the guy from the Secret Service, when are you coming? And he said, no. He said, I'm not telling you that. But I'll tell you it's going to happen today. But my favorite story, and since you let me do this, you knew I was going to do this. Annette came on and said, you guys have to move. We're having Annette. And I said, I do a lot of nets. We don't have to move. The guy said, well, you have to move. So I turned to Mike. I said, they want us to move. We've been on 3 hours. And I got to say the following. No, we are not moving. I'll take all twos and this is KC2SYF. So he got blamed. He got blamed for the whole thing. I love telling that story. But it was a tremendous amount of work. If you haven't seen the video, just go on YouTube and look up DZ10. And Mike did also put the video. Actually, he did everything. I just got to go down there. And there were 9 of us. And we operated. We did 1,200 Qs. We had a little problem with noise right after Obama left, by the way. And but it was a lot of fun. And my wife became a general. She's studying for her extra because now she's chasing DX.
Right on. Right.
So that raises a good point. The operation from DZ10 on the White House.
So being in complete unity with each other, harmony with each other, and not letting the man maneuver us into fighting one another. As long as we practice brotherhood among ourselves, and then others who want to practice brotherhood with us, we're for that. But I don't think that we should run around trying to love somebody who doesn't love us.
Get it? Take a look into the sky and see it scraping the buildings. Or look into the mirror, see the face of resilience. My heart and frustration is in it. When I spit it, it's vintage. Soul molded into my own image. Yeah. One thing I can tell you is you got to be free. It ain't hard to tell. One thing I can tell you is you got to be free. Yeah, it ain't hard to tell. One thing I can tell you is you got to be free. Yeah, it ain't hard to tell.
Hi, I'm Christina from Colony. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM ACRAP.
Tune in to a special Christmas Eve broadcast on WGXC 90.7 FM. All day, Monday, December 24th, hear holiday favorites, strange snowy sounds, bells and whistles, parodies, and more unique holiday music. Tune in live at 5 p.m. for a Christmas Eve service broadcast from the First Presbyterian Church on Warren Street in Hudson. And at the top of the hour all day, hear reports from the North American Aerospace Defense Command of Santa's journey around the globe. Tune in for round-the-clock holiday coverage on Christmas Eve, Monday, December 24th, on WGXC 90.7 FM.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the Healthcare Consortium, a rural health network dedicated to improving access to healthcare and supporting the health and well-being of the people in our rural community. Throughout 2018, the Healthcare Consortium will be celebrating 20 years of serving the residents of Columbia and Greene counties. To learn more about the Healthcare Consortium and its services, please visit www.columbiahealthnet.org or call 518-822-8820.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant. Lorna Charant Littleway is reporting for the Columbia paper. 2 proposed local laws have been approved by the Hilldale Short-Term Rental Task Force. The first, local law number 1, seeks to regulate short-term rentals, more commonly known as Airbnbs, after the company of the same name. Under the proposed new regulations, short-term rentals would be considered similar to commercial lodging establishments like motels and bed and breakfast facilities. Owners of short-term rentals would be required to operate with an annual permit costing $50, and the properties would also be subject to mandated periodic impromptu inspections. Unregistered STR properties would be subject to a fine. All facilities would be required to have an owner, manager, or authorized representative living within 20 miles of the property. Proposed law number 2 seeks to align the town's zoning law definitions to conform with state standards. According to Hillsdale resident Craig Norton, the town's thresholds for determining what a major project is, and I quote, are too small, end quote. Both task force approved local laws now go to the County Planning Board for review. Following that review, a public hearing will be held, after which the Hillsdale Town Board will vote on both measures. You can read that full story in the Columbia paper. Rachel Silverstein is reporting for the Times Union. Governor Andrew M. Cuomo, December 17th, announced his executive agenda for 2019 and recreational marijuana legalization, a, and I quote, Green New Deal, end quote, and gun control measures were near the top of the list. Cuomo said during a speech in Manhattan, and I quote, Let's legalize the adult use of recreational marijuana once and for all, end quote. Marijuana legalization will be part of Cuomo's criminal justice reform platform, which includes ending cash bail. Cuomo said, and I quote, We have two criminal justice systems, one for the wealthy and well-off and one for everyone else, and that's going to end, end quote. He outlined policy items to be accomplished during the first 100 days of his third term. On the environmental front, Cuomo called for New York's electricity to be 100%, and I quote, carbon neutral, end quote, by 2040. During his speech, the governor channeled former New York governor and President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, asking, and I quote, what would FDR do, end quote, if he was saddled with the same challenges from what Cuomo described as a hostile federal government. Read the full story in the Times Union. Patricia Doxey's reporting for the Daily Freeman. Democrats in 2019 are in a position to take control from their Republican colleagues to lead the Ulster County Legislature. Although in November 2017, Republicans retained their majority by one vote, in 2018, an Independence Party member changed his voting allegiance from Republican to Democrat, thereby allowing Democrats to take control. As a result, current minority leader Hector Rodriguez, a Democrat who represents New Platts, is now the front-runner to serve as the legislature's next chairman. Rodriguez, a 8-term county lawmaker, has been chosen by the Democrat caucus as its candidate for chairman. He will need a minimum of 12 votes to win, so a single Democratic defector could cost him the job. As a result, the current chairman, Wallkill Republican Ken Runk, has been lobbying his fellow lawmakers, hoping to keep the post he has held for 3 years. Ronk said, and I quote, I'm having conversations with my colleagues, and we'll take it from there, end quote. He said during his time as chairman, the legislature has worked with the county executive, Democrat Michael Hine, to invest in improving infrastructure, increase services to the underserved, and adopting a comprehensive human rights law. Rodriguez said he recognizes that if elected chairman, he will lead a closely divided legislature. Read that full story in the Daily Freeman. Chris McKenna is reporting for The Fray. U.S. Representative Sean Patrick Maloney spoke in the cider tasting room at Soon's Orchard in New Hampton, Orchard County, December 14th, celebrating bipartisan passage of the 5-year Farm Bill renewal. Maloney said, and I quote, This bill is better than the 2014 bill, and the 2014 bill was the best we had, end quote. Pieces of the three bills the Cold Spring Democrats sponsored were incorporated into the final measure. Among them, a renewed grant program to fund training and other help for new farmers, doubling the loan limit for new farmers to buy land to $600,000 from $300,000, and changes in federal crop insurance that Maloney said would improve coverage for Hudson Valley farms with diverse crops. Maloney also applauded the elimination of the expanded work requirements for recipients of monthly grocery subsidies through the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or food stamps. House Republicans put the rules in their version of the Farm Bill, but Senate Republicans rejected them. Read the full story at The Fray. And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Graham. Have a good day. And a pleasant tomorrow.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts a partly sunny Tuesday with a high near just 25 degrees and a windy day with gusts as high as 32 miles per hour. Tuesday night should be mostly clear with a low around 13. Wednesday should be sunny with a high near 37 and a low around 23. And Thursday should be partly sunny with a high near 41 and a low around 34. I'm Tom Rowe with WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, listener-supported, creative radio for open ears.
There are so many events on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.com. www.wgxc.org, and you can add your own by pressing the Add an Event button right there on the page. If you do, folks like me will read your community event on the radio. Folks around the world will see it online at wgxc.org, including some of these events.
On Tuesday, the 18th, the Durham Town Board meeting will start at 7:30 p.m. and will be held at Durham Town Hall. And then on Wednesday, December 19th, the Catskill Town Board Committee meeting will be held at Catskill Town Hall starting at 6:30 p.m. with live web stream on WGXC.org. Join us Friday, December 21st for The Orchestra Now presents an invigorating evening of classical greats from 7 to 8 p.m. at Hudson Hall at the historic Hudson Opera House. Writers from The Daily Show, Matt Koff, Kat Radley, and Joe Opio perform at the Colony Cafe in Woodstock beginning at 8 p.m. And then on Saturday the 22nd, in partnership with Wave Farm, Phil Klein's Unsilent Night returns to Hudson for a third year. Led by Phil Klein himself and broadcast live on Wave Farm's WGXE 90.7 FM radio for open ears. Participants gather at WGXE's Hudson Studio, 369 Warren Street, inside the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson at Warren and 4th Streets, with entrance on 4th. Participants can expect a route that engages Hudson's lesser-traveled alleys and enclaves, and to come away with a new experience of the city's historic streetscape. All are invited to participate. To do so, arrive at the WGXE Hudson Studio, First Presbyterian Church, no later than 6:45 p.m., and bring a boombox or smartphone with external speakers. The documentary Farmland will be shown at the Village of Coosackie Hall starting at 4 p.m. The Columbia County Soil and Water Conservation District invites you to explore Mud Creek under the glow of the full moon starting at 7:30 p.m. at the Columbia County Soil and Water Conservation District on Route 66 in Ghent. And Lou Barlow performs solo at the Root Cellar in Greenfield, Massachusetts, starting at 8 o'clock. And then finally, on Sunday the 23rd, Charlie Brown Christmas video with live piano soundtrack by Wesley Harper from Hilo and Catskill starting at 11 a.m. with web stream on WGXC.org. Folk Tales and Stories Hour with Pamela Badia at the Hudson Area Library at 2 p.m. A discussion on the Christmas writings of Charles Dickens will be held starting at 2 o'clock at the Claverack Free Library on Route 23B. And a Christmas dance party from Eric Red will begin at 8 p.m. at the Colony Cafe in Woodstock. That's it for this week's WGXC Community Calendar. You can add your own event and hear it right here on the radio by visiting WGXC.org and clicking on the calendar link at the top of the page.
Next, we have these reports.
Here's an interview from our partners at WOOCLP from the Sanctuary for Media Art in Troy, New York. You can go to the SoundCloud page for Media Sanctuary or look up the Sanctuary for Media Art webpage or Facebook page online for more information or to hear the complete interview.
Up next, to close out the show, we're going to be speaking with Jada Joof about her work with the organization Moms Rising. Jada, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Thank you so much for coming on. Can you start off by talking a little bit about what Moms Rising does?
Yeah. So Moms Rising is an online movement, group of families, mothers, and women who cultivate and come together remotely to make social justice change. We do a lot of online petitioning. We do on-the-ground meetups. We go up to the Hill often to advocate to our legislators and leaders of the country for reform on policies that we're passionate about.
And then what do you do with Moms Rising?
So I am a campaign assistant at Moms Rising. I started about 2 years ago, fresh out of college. And I work on a series of campaigns. And what I do is I work on social media, so mm-hmm. getting the word out about the issues mm-hmm. that we're working on, and really just organizing and getting people to bringing people to Moms Rising mm-hmm. and having them get excited and getting involved and building up their passions to take issues on the actions that we advocate for.
Awesome. And so what kinds of issues are you working on right now?
So right now, as I mentioned earlier, I work on a few campaigns, some of them being maternal justice, the maternal justice campaign, Healthy Kids campaign, where we specifically focus on the school-to-prison pipeline, and an immigration team as well. And awesome. All those teams, we focus on a series of issues, of course, with all the things going on right now with immigration in the country. That is a hot team right now. So a lot of our actions are early, rapid response, and really just reacting to the things that we see online and policies that have been brought to our attention. And with the Healthy Kids team, we've recently sort of moved on from advocating for healthy school plans in schools and healthy marketing towards children in supermarkets and stores. And we really are trying to uplift the national crisis that students of color are being pushed out of schools and expelled out of schools and pushed into prisons. On the maternal justice team, we're focusing now on Black maternal health. Recently, Senate Bill 1112 passed, which changes the game for mothers who are expecting and mothers who have experiences, disparities in their medical and birthing experiences.
Awesome. That sounds like really important work.
Yeah. All right. So, you know, I'm very excited about your work, the work that you're doing. Is there a way that someone can contact Mom Rising?
Yeah. So we are an online organization. So you can visit us at Facebook. .com/momsrising. That's MOMSRISING. On Twitter, same thing, at Moms Rising. Instagram, at Moms Rising. We also have a youth-based community that I coordinate alongside my other colleague, Beatrice. It's called Kids Rising.
All right. Well, thank you, Jada Ju, for coming on and talking to us about Moms Rising.
That interview was from our media partners at WOOCLP in Troy, New York, run by the Sanctuary for Media Art. Go to their SoundCloud page, Media Sanctuary, or their Facebook page or web page for the Sanctuary for Independent Media for more information or to hear that full interview. Here are some more headlines from WOOCLP, WGXC's partner station in Troy.
Governor Andrew M. Cuomo, who has previously called cannabis a, quote, gateway drug, unquote, will include a marijuana legalization proposal in his 2019 executive agenda. Quote, let's legalize the adult use of recreational marijuana once and for all, unquote, Cuomo said in a speech in Manhattan Monday, previewing his annual State of the State address, which will happen in early January.
The legislation will be part of Cuomo's criminal justice reform platform, which includes ending cash bail and marks a sharp turn for the third-term Democratic governor, who has expressed resistance to the idea as recently as 2017.
Elazar Williams, the 19-year-old left paralyzed after he was shot by a police detective in Albany last August, filed a federal civil rights lawsuit Monday, alleging he was shot from behind after he fell to the ground, then got up to run away from the police. In addition to filing a federal lawsuit, Williams' attorney released a video on Monday that shows Williams running from Detective James Olson, falling and then getting up to run away again before he was shot, the shot was fired. Police have said Williams charged at Olson, but the video does not appear to show the teen moving toward the detective at any time.
Boston Spa school officials and residents were trying to cope Monday with news about a double murder-suicide in the village last week. The Boston Spa School District will host a candlelight vigil at 6 p.m. Tuesday at the high school football field to remember 12-year-old Emma Jones, the 7th grade honor roll student who was shot to death last week by her father, according to police. The vigil, which will be open to the community, will last about 45 minutes.
Programs associated with Raise the Age, which was passed in last year's state budget, are finally getting underway. The legislation changed the criminal justice system so nonviolent offenders ages 16 and 17 would not be charged as adults. The first facility in the area with housing specifically for these minors opened in Schenectady on Monday. The brand new space is ready to house 8 young women who have gone through the criminal justice system. It's called, quote, New Directions, unquote, and is the Northern Rivers facility. CEO Bill Getman says it's meant to serve as another option to jail or prison. The program is one of 13 statewide facilities connected to raise the age legislation.
Environmental groups are calling for New York State to establish very low permissible levels of some hazardous chemicals in drinking water. The state's Drinking Water Quality Council is holding meetings this afternoon in Albany, New York City, and on Long Island. The council is expected to make recommendations for maximum contaminant levels, or MCLs, for 3 chemicals used in manufacturing, PFOA, PFOS, and 1,4-dioxane. Rob Hayes, Clean Water Associate for Environmental Advocates of New York, says it's been more than 3 years since PFOA was found in drinking water in the town of Hoosick Falls.
The council promised that it would do the right thing by these residents. The council now needs to follow through by setting an MCL for PFOA and PFOS at 4 parts per trillion and for 1,4-dioxane at 0.3 parts per billion.
In 2016, the EPA recommended setting maximum levels for PFOA and PFOS at 70 parts per trillion, but a report from the Department of Health and Human Services released in June recommends levels 7 to 10 times lower than the EPA figures. Hayes notes that all 3 industrial chemicals are associated with serious cancer risks.
For PFOA and PFOS, it could be kidney cancer, testicular cancer, thyroid disease, and there are more. 1,4-dioxane is considered a likely human carcinogen by the EPA.
This is the 5th time the council has met since it was convened more than a year ago. Hayes says under the Trump administration, the Federal Environmental Protection Agency has been very slow to act and cannot be relied on to take the steps necessary to protect drinking water.
The council and Department of Health and ultimately Governor Cuomo need to step up and say that in the lack of federal leadership on this issue, the state will take action and put in place the strongest drinking water protections in the nation.
For New York News Connection, I'm Andrea Sears.
The Farm Bill passed by Congress last week did not include major cuts to SNAP, formerly known as food stamps, but food security advocates say it falls short of meeting nutritional needs. The House version of the Farm Bill had included new work requirements for SNAP benefits and would have redirected $1 billion to a job training program, measures opponents said would have forced millions to lose benefits. While those provisions were left out of the 5-year authorization that won bipartisan approval, Joel Berg, CEO of Hunger Free America, doesn't think the final bill is cause for celebration.
As long as there are 40 million Americans living in homes that can't afford enough food, far greater than before the start of the recession, I don't think it's a great victory that we did nothing to actually reduce hunger in America.
Despite his disappointment, Berg is gratified that cuts were excluded from the bill and is calling on President Donald Trump to sign it. Berg points out that at current levels, the average SNAP benefit is just $1.36 per meal, too low to provide adequate nutrition.
That level of food insecurity has devastating impacts on our country because hungry children don't learn, hungry seniors don't survive independently, and hungry workers can't work effectively.
He adds that the United States is the only industrialized Western nation with such high levels of hunger. With Democrats taking control of the House in the coming year, Berg hopes they will introduce measures that go beyond avoiding cuts to nutrition programs.
Most immediately, we hope they pass a child nutrition reauthorization bill that actually makes all school meals and summer meals and after-school snacks universal regardless of family income.
He says ending hunger in America will benefit everyone by reducing health care expenditures, helping children learn, and improving worker productivity. For Public News Service, I'm Andrea Sears.
We're joined by John Soule. What is your position at the Bridge Street
Theater? I'm the artistic and managing director at Bridge Street Theater in Catskill.
Right down the street here, the wonderful theater that came to Catskill 3 years ago?
Well, this is actually our fifth season. We're just finishing our fifth season.
So you've been here a while now.
Well, we bought the building in 2013. We started doing stuff in 2014. So, yeah. Yeah. It's been quite an adventure.
How was this past season?
It was great, really great. We did 5 shows in our regular production season. We did a lot of special events. Last show was a big show for us called Casse-Noisette. It was a world premiere of a play by a playwright named Michael Whistler, who we had had some connections with in the past. And it was a play about Tchaikovsky with a parallel story about a modern character played by the same person who played the Tchaikovsky character. And both were troubled, let's say, in troubled relationships with young men. And the modern character was a high school teacher, so definitely problematic. And Tchaikovsky, the word is, the story is now that he probably committed suicide in order to keep his reputation from being destroyed by the fact that he had had inappropriate relationships, let's say, with very young men. Most Soviet authorities and scholars will deny that, but apparently that's what happened.
It's a hidden history.
Yes, definitely a hidden history. So this was about hidden histories, actually, and it was a really amazing play. And we had great reaction to it, so it was a good end to our season.
All right, and you've got a bunch of new things planned for 2019?
We do indeed, yes.
How many shows are you putting on this
year?
Well,
we're doing 5 shows as part of our regular season. I'll just push now and then come back to it later. But you can buy a season subscription pass for just $100 that gets you into all 5 shows for free.
Is that at bridgestreettheater.org?
Org, yes. You can find out all about it there, yeah. Anyway, we're doing 2 world premieres. We did 1 world premiere last year, the Casse-Noisette play. We're doing 2 this year. We're also achieving gender parity, which is a wonderful goal for us. We actually, 3 of the 5 plays we're doing are women playwrights, female playwrights, and 3 of the directors that are directing the plays are also women. So we're very excited about that. Get some female energy in there, which we love. So the first play we're doing in April, it's called The Letters. It's by a guy named David Zelnick. We've had a long-term relationship with him, actually, just knowing his plays. And I directed a couple of his plays at Stageworks in Hudson, short plays. He's probably best known now for a play called Yank, which is a musical that he wrote with his brother. His brother wrote the music. It's a play about World War II magazine for gay World War II soldiers. And it was done at the York Theater, which does a lot of new musicals in New York City. It was done, they workshopped it for a Broadway production, but couldn't get the funding for it. So then it was done in London to great success, and it was done in Rio to great success, but still hasn't been done in the U.S. Anyway, this play is a play with 4 characters, and it was workshopped at Ensemble Studio Theater in New York, where David is a member. They had an option on it for about a year and then decided they didn't want to do it. And then it went to the Public Theater for a while and they looked at it and they weren't sure. And it was also a film and a Stage and Film, which is an organization that works at Vassar at the Powerhouse Theater, was also did a reading of it in New York City. So it's been around for a while, but no one seemed to pick it up, and we had been interested in it from the beginning, and David finally said, okay, you got it. You're doing the world premiere of it. So that's really exciting for us. It's a beautiful play about three...
There is nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. If we wish to make it softer, we will tune it to a whisper. We will control the horizontal. We will control the vertical. We can roll the image. Make it flutter. We can change the focus to a soft blur or sharpen it to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit quietly and we will control all that you see and hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with your television set. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
This is Echo. You are listening to WJFC Acra, Creative Community Magical Radio.
I'm a rogue.